Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 7 of Hometown Glory, your Spurs and Culture podcast. I'm Charlie and I am delighted that Rosa and Tom join me to run through two wins over Leicester City this weekend. We'll also, of course, have some culture picks for you. But let's get at it, you both. The Saturday fixture first, Tottenham Hotspur 6, Leicester City 2. Rosa, I very much enjoyed what you joked to me straight after the game. Just a regulation thrashing over a relegation-haunted team. Nothing to see here, except there kind of was plenty to see there at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Saturday, right? Let's start. Where do we start with such a bonkers game? Rosa, right at the beginning, perhaps? I feel like this is your chance to, if not defend Davinson Sanchez's honour, then at least this is just your opportunity to talk about Dav before Tom and I do.
I'm going to do it. I don't care. I said I would and I'm going to do it. And I've really thought about it as well, however sad that makes me. I think, yeah, one, totally normal thrashing. Nothing else to see here. Not a problem. The big issue, I think, is that there were just too many changes all at once. I think that defence is really well drilled, but it's well drilled with the Gentleman, Dyer, Romero kind of holy trinity. And I don't feel like we're quite at a sort of plug and play situation yet. So I think while you can take out one of them, you can't take out two. So I feel like that put Dav at a disadvantage, number one. Number two, I don't actually, like, I've watched the penalty again. And I don't, and I think it's actually really Rosa. Unlucky. It's really unfortunate. No, I do. So one,
you think he was unlucky that he
No, I mean, obviously it was a penalty, but okay. If you go through it, okay, so he makes a horrible mistake to start with. Yes, fine. Then he tries to recover. Then Perisic makes a horrible mistake.
Perisic then, makes two quite wild lunges, if I think. I think
there you go. See, not just
makes,
one.
That makes sort of three mistakes and Perisic two. So it was a farcical situation.
Yeah. Right? So by the end, it's just a disaster. But also, if you look at where he, like, obviously he takes him out. So, you know, it's a foul one way or the other. But it's so close to being not being a penalty, to being just outside the box. So I feel like the gods were just not smiling upon him that day. And I don't think even the biggest Dav haters, I think, would have to admit that was, like, unexpectedly poor. Like, he's not that poor. Like, I think he's not Romero level, that's fine. But I think he is a decent deputy. And that was quite unexpected. And given the context of everybody else playing, like, like old Tottenham, I guess. It doesn't look that crazy to me because the whole defense was bananas that first half, right? We've restricted every other team to like very, very, very few chances. Even Chelsea at Stamford Bridge had a few, had hardly any chances at all. And those were like from distance. But that game, that first half, it was just like, yeah, just come right at us, come all the way at us. So I just don't think, that's not on Dav. I'm sorry, but it's not.
On Dav, I mean, I've defended him quite a lot as well, but it was a soft penalty, but you kind of do eventually have to ask yourself, how unlucky is he? How many times can he be?
Very, Tom, very. That's my answer.
But I just wanted to agree with your point, that especially that first 45 minutes, the entire back five were a shambles, weren't they, really?
Yeah.
Perisic was good going forward and terrible.
So was Cesc, I think. Defending.
Yeah.
I think Cesc had a lot of fun going forward as well.
Yeah. Both the wing-backs were good going forward, terrible defending.
Yeah.
Longley doesn't offer much as a defender, I don't think. Like, his passing is really...
He's quite passive, isn't he? He's quite sort of... He's sort of like the photo negative of Romero, who has never met an opportunity to clobber someone that he turned down. Whereas Longley comes from that sort of, if I don't dive in, then nothing bad will happen. So I'm just going to sort of not do anything and it'll be fine. And most of the time it kind of is fine.
He didn't make any we didn't notice him making any like outrageous mistakes. And in the context of that first half, that was like the best that could be hoped for.
Yeah, because it was chaos. It was complete chaos. And I mean, even, you know, we'll get on to the second half, but all the way through to basically the fourth goal, yeah, 3-2, it was still very much, oh God, this is going to be a 4-3, 5-4 sort of bonkers game. And it sort of reminded me of those occasional thrashings we would dish out in the sort of early noughties. We would beat like Southampton sort of 7-2 out of nowhere, but never quite be in control somehow, despite winning by 5 clear goals. It would still feel like, you know, you were on the edge of your seat until the 7th had gone in. And it had, you know, a similar-ish vibe where, like Rosa says, we gave up so many opportunities. I mean, I think we gave up something like 19 shots or something, which for a Conte Spurs team is just madness. Tom, do you agree with Rosa in terms of I think there were 4 or 5 changes to the 11 from Sporting. Was that one too many? And I think obviously the glaring one felt like Romero. That, considering international break was just around the corner, it wasn't like we were going to play midweek this week. Was the Romero one particularly puzzling for you?
Yeah, we missed Romero massively, didn't we? And I just, sitting in the south stand, you kind of... behind Hugo, you take the rough with the smooth. We watched him save that penalty, which was, you know, briefly, obviously joyous. But what was killing me yet again was Hugo playing short passes to Dav while Leicester were really pressing us. That was like, yeah, just seemed totally crazy. Hugo, yeah, those short passes were doing my head in. And you mentioned the chaos, actually. I took my dad to this one. He doesn't come to tons of games. Gave him a ticket for his birthday. So he got 8 goals out of it. But it reminded me that me and him in December 2007 were at the Reading game at White Hart Lane, which was the 6-4.
Oh, wow.
The 6-4.
The Berbatov, he scored like 4 or something that day, didn't he?
Yeah, between Christmas and New Year. But you're right, that was, again, like very old school, total chaos, and yet we somehow scored 6 goals. And especially after that first half, it definitely felt like that kind of game.
One thing we are now very good at, and that is not that chaotic for us, which feels like a bit of a massive sea change, is corners and set pieces. I mean, speaking of Sanchez, he obviously nearly redeemed himself just before halftime by nearly sort of nodding in another really good Perisic delivery from a free kick. But the corners particularly, you know, we'll get on to Sonny, of course, but him being on the bench allowed Perisic sort of and Kulusevski a couple of times, I think, free rein to sort of whip as many balls as they wanted, presumably by design from our sort of brand spanking new set pieces coach, Gianni Vio, who we probably owe a sizable debt to for the victory on the weekend. I mean, we should say, obviously, Leicester were about as bad defending corners as I've ever seen anyone ever. I think I looked it up and they've conceded 19 goals from corners since the start of the 2020-2021 season, which is just hilarious. 19 goals. That's so many goals from corners.
Those but feel like Tottenham stats. Like, I'm
this is what I mean.
Like,
it's
if
so
you
weird.
Go back in the past, like, we were that sort of team that conceded off corners so regularly. They were all tiny, though, right? I mean, I know, is it we talked about it and it was just like, does Brendan Rodgers just think they're really tall because he's really short? But they were definitely, I felt like they were considerably shorter than our lot. And I know we have quite a tall team, but it just didn't bode terribly well for them, did it?
It didn't. It's the first time I've ever nearly made a sort of in the moment prediction right when we had that third corner, which Sanchez was again quite harshly adjudged to have fouled Danny Ward in the Leicester goal, and the goal was ruled out. But I said just before, we're going to score from this. Leicester cannot defend corners, and we are just whipping in ball after ball after ball. And we very nearly proved me right for once, but alas, didn't. But Perisic on corners is just a revelation, right, Tom? He's just absolutely just mustard with them.
I know we're going to get on to Son, but it's been driving me pretty nuts that he's still been taking the corners because Perisic is so good at them. The way he whips them in is just amazing. Plus,
with both feet, of course, it's just incredible.
Yeah, plus we seem to like doing the kind of short corner thing, and that's where Son needs to be, surely, so he can whip one in from a kind of different, a better angle for him. Perisic's corners are amazing. And that Dav one was so soft, the one that was disallowed.
Mad, absolutely mad. And I loved, I mean, I think it was obviously something most of us enjoyed seeing Kulusevski back in the starting lineup. But that arrow of a cross for Kane's equaliser was just, I love that that's becoming one of his like textbook manoeuvres. That's just absolutely just, he hits it so hard as well. Like, it's not one of these kind of dainty little floated crosses that gives the keeper a chance to come and claim it. He just whips it with such venom that all Kane has to do is just sort of put his head vaguely in the direction of the ball and you're in. Love our corners at the minute, which is something I don't think I'd ever thought I would say about Tottenham Hotspur. We mentioned the wing-backs. Pretty rough day defensively. Cess kind of gets out-muscled for Leicester's equaliser for 2-2. Is the kind of Perisic on the right, Sessegnon on the left? And I know they swapped around at certain points, but is that something we want to see more of? Rosa, would you want to see those two out of our options at wing-back sort of become the de facto starters there?
I don't know about de facto starters, although I do love Cess. I think Perisic would have been fine. Again, I really do feel like there were too many changes. I don't feel like you can just change the back line, change one whole side and just be like, that's fine. So I think it would have been okay with Perisic there if he'd had Romero right behind him, to be honest. I feel like that just wouldn't have been, well, maybe not wouldn't have been a problem, but would have been much, much, much less of a problem. So that's just it as far as I'm concerned. I would like to see it again because it was funny when Emerson finally got on, wasn't it? Because he did fine after like the first 5 minutes was chaos. And then after that, he settled. But you were again reminded of what little he offers going forward, alas.
Alas.
I didn't mind the idea of playing Perisic and Sessegnon as wing-backs, but it is fairly absurd that we've got three right wing-backs and none of them were playing, right?
It's bonkers. I mean, Spence again didn't make the bench, but yeah, it's not the best situation that we've got this surplus of people that Conte probably isn't that fond of in that position.
But I think Perisic was bought so he could play kind of across all of those positions, right? So it doesn't feel that crazy to me. I mean,
I guess it just leaves you short on the left, right? If you're gonna start playing Perisic on the right, suddenly you've only got Sessegnon unless you bring Perisic back over to the left, but in terms of someone on the bench to come on for Sessegnon if Perisic is doing well on the right. We're talking ourselves.
Yeah, because it's true. Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those weird things, isn't it? Where like Conte has this system, but the sort of fundamental, the most important aspects of it. Well, I guess the most important is the midfield really, isn't it? But like the second most important are still like completely random and unsettled. And we're all thinking, why is this still the situation? We've had like two transfer windows. Should this not be fixed?
It also, I don't know, there's this general kind of suggestion that both Skip and Doherty like aren't ready, aren't fit enough, aren't kind of game ready as well. And yet they've been on the bench for most of the season now, right? Both Skip and Doherty. I don't really understand that. And like, why, if they're not ready to come on, like, why are they on the bench? And why have they been on the bench so much?
I think this because we talked about this a little bit last week, didn't we? And I think it is because of how we've been winning games. I think if we'd won games more comfortably by bigger margins, we'd have seen more substitutions made earlier on. And it was sort of, it's so weird looking back at this game and thinking kind of we won it by such a large margin, but kind of so late on that, again, there still wasn't really the time to make any of those substitutions, really. I do think, because Billy said last week, didn't he? He thinks after the international break, we will probably see those two at least more integrated. And I would hope that happens because otherwise it's just a bit weird, isn't it? But I also feel like we're being a little bit negative. We suddenly spiraled into a little bit of negativity because it was an amazingly fun day in the end, wasn't it? Like, stress aside, it was actually superb, right? Like,
it
Sonny's back.
Fun. Yeah, let's talk Sonny. Let's talk Sonny, right? Because that was up there. That when that goal flew in, the first one, that was up there in terms of noise, in terms of emotion in the stadium, in terms of just people just bursting with relief and joy and excitement and just happiness for a player that we obviously all just adore. Tom, you're obviously our man in the South Stand. Rosa and I are up perched in the West, so it wasn't quite perhaps the same vibe. I imagine it just exploded, right? It was incredible. And just a gorgeous moment.
Yeah, I sit in the southwest corner, and actually the Bentancur goal just before, which like shout out Bentancur because he had an incredible game, a goal and an assist, I think. And one of his
Razor's making a face.
one of his best games for us so far, I think. But
agree to disagree. I know this is gonna sound crazy from someone who just defended Davinson Sanchez, but I feel like Bentancur started really well and then had like a massive wobble for ages. And then came back and scored that goal and then was fine.
Well, so I'm going to come on to that. Yeah. Because I feel like that sort of central midfield roller coaster that you have to endure as both the Tottenham Hotspur player and supporter at the minute maybe speaks to a broader issue that I'm going to get you guys on in a minute.
Back to the fun. Sorry. The Bentancur goal kind of looked like it wasn't going in from my corner and it snuck in. And then that first Song goal, oh my God, like that's a vintage. We know like he can do it. And that's why it's been so frustrating until now because he just hasn't found that space. And I think early on in the game, there was a point in the first half where he did a couple of weird pirouettes and kind of gave the ball away really cheaply. And, you know, everyone around us was like, oh, he's just overthinking it. He's taking a touch too many every time. And then the first goal and the second goal, especially his first and second goal, he just finds space and it's an absolute rocket. And yeah, especially both the first and second were so beautiful, but that first one, like how he snuck it in. The keeper even went the right way, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like, and it snuck in the very fucking corner, like dipped in. It was so beautiful. And thank God he's back. The weird, just while we're on Sonny, on kind of WhatsApp group I'm on for fantasy with some old workmates, someone said before the game, like, is Son going to be dropped? And I said, well, he should be. And then after the game, they said to me, oh, it was an Arsenal fan, you'll be unsurprised to know. Then replied going, this aged well. And I said, well, no, that like it did age well because he did deserve to be dropped. Conte played a masterclass. Conte's tactics were perfect. And he came on, had a point to prove and scored a hat-trick. It was beautiful. Thank God he's back.
I think the whole day perhaps speaks to the idea that maybe we should trust that Antonio Conte knows what he's doing a wee bit, right? I think, and again, as I sort of hinted at, I think it's a weird experience watching us right now, yeah? Because I do feel like there are definite points where it's a bit of a, it's a bit grueling to watch us sort of give up quite so much of the ball. Leicester City turn up, the bottom of the league. Yes, they have players like Maddison and Barnes and people like that that are very capable going forward. But you would expect being at home and Leicester coming off the back of five straight defeats for us to be able to sort of control the match. But such is the way that we're set up. It's all about end result, I guess, right? And it's all about, you know, it doesn't matter if the opposition has the ball and are passing it around all nicely and we lie in wait and when we get the ball we're off to the races and we counter at 200 miles an hour, which is thrilling, and we tend to create really dangerous chances when it works. Obviously there's been a few occasions recently, you know, the first half of the Marseille game didn't work at all, the Sporting game was a bit of a weird one all around, but it is working. We're unbeaten. We've played 7, won 5, drawn 2. That's, you know, our best start to a Premier League season in forever. But Tom, you first. When you're watching it, how does it make you feel? Do you get pissed off? Are you able to sort of look at the bigger picture stuff and go, well, do you know what? It's not the prettiest. It's not the most free flowing. But I do obviously trust this world class manager, and this is how he plays, and this is how he sets up, and his results speak for themselves. What kind of emotional journey do you go on when watching Tottenham at the moment? And ultimately, how does it make you feel? It's quite a big question, isn't it?
That is a big question. There was definitely a point in that first half where it looked like we didn't want the ball. And I wasn't on the last podcast, but I listened to Rosa talking about, you know, this is Conte's style of play. We need to get used to it. You know, he's an Italian manager. We're not going to play beautiful football. We're going to play pragmatic football and get results. At the same time, and I love him so much, and I'm loving the results. But yeah, there was a point in that first half where I was like, why don't we fucking want the ball? It's Leicester. Why aren't we pressing them? We were kind of sitting back and waiting for them to score, it felt like. And then obviously the kind of, besides Sonny, the thing you're then going is, well, we need another 2 goals before we can relax when, you know, there's only a 1 goal margin, because we were defending very badly as well, as we touched on. So yeah, there's definitely a roller coaster. And, you know, without Son, we would have maybe scraped a 3-2 or drawn 3-3 maybe. So I don't know, but yeah, there's a lot. It's a roller coaster, but I do trust in Conte for sure.
Rosa, do you think it comes down to that simple fact, essentially, that we do have to park our sort of Spurs fan neuroses to a degree, and also the desire we have as a fan base, you know, the sort of romanticized vision of what Tottenham Hotspur football should be, versus the fact we have this elite winner that is threatening to, you know, upturn a lot of those neuroses and doesn't give two shits about the idea of having to play sort of frilly football and it be, you know, all high pressing and possession. How does it make you feel in turn? I'll ask the same question.
I feel like there's just a lot. It's a real melting pot. Like, it's a very like heady stew. I would say there's a lot of things going on. The first thing is that game, I don't feel like you can, that wasn't a typical Conte game, right? It was crazy. So I don't feel like you can necessarily draw a whole bunch of conclusions from that game, because we quite clearly in the first half, we're not playing the way he wants us to play. The second half of the game was being reminded of how thrilling it can be when it works. And that's why we need Son, because he makes those counters look incredible. Mm-hmm. That first goal, when he gets the ball and everybody in that stadium is up off their seats, right? That's it. Everyone's like waiting for something incredible to happen. And then it does. So it's thrilling when it works. On a kind of personal level, to be honest, I don't like most football matches I don't enjoy. Like I just don't enjoy them. They're too stressful. Like in the moment, I'm not really having a good time. That's just a fact. Like unless we're winning, you know, by like 3 or even 4-0, I can't. I'm spending most of the time thinking, why am I here? What am I doing? This is such a weird thing to be doing with my life. I'm really like, I don't need the extra angst. So I don't find watching Conte's teams like necessarily more stressful than any other Spurs team of the past. And I also have spent so long watching Tottenham be so bad in defense that it will take a long old time before I get bored of watching us be competent, frankly. And I also think a lot of people, myself included, do slightly, because it's all very well to say we've got this elite manager and he's going to come in and finally we're going to win something. But most of us thought that was going to happen with Jose. So I also feel like people, there's a whole load of like, there's some PTSD going on there as well. So it's just a lot as ever with our extremely neurotic fan base, of which I am definitely one. So I don't know, really. I feel like, yeah, the results speak for themselves. His record speaks for itself. But I also don't think the football is that bad. And I think you definitely saw that in the second half on Saturday. Like, that's when it works. That's the point. And basically, who are we trying to be anyway? You know, Liverpool and City can play in that, like, possession-based attacking football way. Everybody else is kind of trying to find some sort of path through. And it's not like, I don't know, we're not like a big Sam team or anything. I think there's a slight overreaction from some sections of our fan base as well.
Totally agree. And when we're talking about competency as well, because it always seems to get to this part sort of half an hour in and we haven't mentioned Harry Kane.
It's the old Hometown Glory half hour Harry Kane bell. We need to ring it.
You know, because we just expect it from him, but he got a goal and then his assist for the second Son goal, was it, I think, was the way he picked out Son, who was in space, was just amazing. And now Son's clicked, you know, touch wood, those two are going to be like so good from here on. But yeah, shouts to Harry, because he's so good every week, like week in, week out. And yeah, he was brilliant, I thought.
Well, and watching that partnership as well, isn't it? Like when you see Kane get the ball and there's like a little light that goes on in Son's brain and you see him just go, right, I'm off, because he knows a pass is going to come, and it does. That's just one of the most beautiful things that we've been privileged to witness in football, I think.
I completely agree. And leads me to another question for you both, not quite as sort of philosophical perhaps, but the Kane-Son partnership really sort of came to life once we changed formation on Saturday. We brought Basuma on for Kulu, I think. Yeah, Kulusevski. And we moved to the sort of 3-5-2. So kind of Højbjerg on the left, Basuma as the kind of anchor, and then Bentancur more on the right-hand side of the midfield three, with Kane and Son a lot closer together. And I think we saw the benefit of them being a lot closer together with the particularly Son's second goal. And also, I think it did wrestle control of the game in our favour. I think having that extra man in midfield, particularly as I think it was the first instance we've seen some sort of Brighton Basuma make an appearance. He was winning the ball, he was giving it, you know, he looked quite sharp. And is that an option we want to see more of? I mean, we have a fairly enormous game coming up in less than 2 weeks, where maybe having an extra body in midfield, maybe you do want Kane and Son to, you know, we're not going to get into a big Arsenal preview now. That's going to come up. Tom made the point before we recorded, we very much need Billy to do our sort of tub thumping, you know, pure passion pod for that one. So don't worry, we won't do that without Billy or Ash. But 3-5-2 looked all right. Yeah, as an option, nice to have in the back pocket, Tom.
Yeah, and I mean, we mentioned that our wing-backs or full-backs can't really defend at the moment. So I think that having them as all-out wingers and Perisic, Cesc, Royale, whoever, flying forward is quite fun. I think what's kind of weird in that is that we currently have four amazing attackers trying to get three spots. Yeah. So, I mean, that will make it four for two. And obviously the two probably are Son and Kane.
But, or maybe Kulusevski becomes a wing back. Who knows? Yeah, maybe it affords you the security to have him do what he did against Marseille and be that sort of buccaneering, super attacking wing back. Who knows? Who knows? I'm just...
That's a good shout. But I think, as you said, like, it was all so chaotic in the second half that I was struggling to see the formation kind of settle. But I do think Bissouma was much better than we've seen him in a Spurs shirt so far. And yeah, like you said, three of them against, say, an Arsenal is a great option.
Rosa, what did you make of it? And would you want to see more of it?
I would, but I also don't think we're going to. I think certainly not to start games. I would genuinely be shocked at this point if Conte like set up a team to begin with those three in midfield, as nice as it is and as much as it would give us more a sense of kind of security. I don't think he'll do it. I think he seems so wedded to this formation. I would be absolutely shocked. I mean, you know, you never know. And it was really nice to see him. I was really pleased to see Bissouma look a bit kind of calmer, because obviously he's had a bit of a rough start to his career, in like completely understandably. I'm not one of those people who thinks, oh God, why isn't he settled already? He's had his whole preseason. I think it just takes some people a bit more time. So that was nice to see. But I would be totally shocked if Conte was like, this is what we're going to do, because it just doesn't seem to be what he does. And as we all know, like, the results speak for themselves. So
I when he signed, I thought we were going to see that pretty much straight away, because that was very much his Inter formation, where he had Lukaku and Martinez up front with three central midfielders behind. But
I'm not really a formation guy, but isn't there some sort of, was it his Chelsea title winning season that he lost to Arsenal and then changed his formation and changed his tactics?
That's where the wing backs thing sort of first sort of arrived, I think, for him, certainly in England.
So I guess he can.
Hopefully a crushing defeat at the Emirates doesn't spark anything in a couple of weeks, but we'll see. Before we move on to Spurs women, I know Tom, you shouted out Hugo's penalty save. That save he made from Daka at 3-2 was one of the best I think I've seen from him live. I thought he was pretty excellent all game, apart from maybe giving a few little hospital passes to Dav here and there. Hopefully this thigh injury that he's picked up that's kept him out of the French friendlies over the next week or so is just a precaution, and he's back in time for the derby, but we'll see. Anyone else anyone wants to shout out? I feel like we've basically covered almost everyone. One other person, Richarlison, for winning that corner that led to Dyer's second goal, because that was right under where Rosa and I were sat next to each other, and he just really showed why he's there. I think, you know, he's not just all flicks and fancy tricks and stuff. He is such a hard worker, and he's such a nuisance for fullbacks particularly. I think, you know, those sort of little moments, he's going to, you know, I don't think he's going to score like 20 goals this season, but I think the kind of the knock-on effect of him being a pest and the corners he'll win for us, or the free kicks he'll win, or the little passes before the pass, I think he'll just prove so invaluable across the season. Love him. Again, feels wrong to talk about Richarlison without Billy here, because he is now sort of secretary of the Richarlison fan club. But yeah, anyone else anyone wants to shout out before we move on? Tom?
Quick shout to Pierre for his through ball on Son's third, the sixth goal. And I think a couple of weeks ago we touched on Pierre as attacking player, as a kind of playmakery midfielder, and mentioned that he plays kind of as a more offensive midfielder for Denmark. That through ball was wicked. I think I saw a tweet during the rounds that he's kind of put through more through balls than any other player in the league, more than some teams have done, apparently.
He, that whole sequence, like the way he burst by, I think it was Ndidi that was still playing at that point, but just sort of, I think Bissouma nicked the ball and then Højbjerg just sort of hit the afterburners and just burst by. He seemed to really come alive once Bissouma came on. He seemed to suddenly have every trick under the sun on that left-hand side. He was looking great. Rose, are anyone else you want to shout out before we move?
I want to shout out the South Korean fans again, to be honest, because I really felt for everyone who'd shown up to obviously watch their hero.
And it seemed like there were loads and loads and loads, like more so than normal, right?
Yeah, there was like a crowd in front of us, right? And I just thought, oh God, he's been dropped, and it's been such a disaster. But there they were, and then he came on and scored a 30-minute hat trick, and they were just out of their minds with joy. I mean, so were we all. It was such a glorious moment, wasn't it? We all just, like, there was just so much love going around the stadium. I think we all got quite emotional. But I was just so happy for us and so happy for them. It was so, so, so lovely.
It was a real reminder of what a just beautiful thing it's been having all these, like, lovely, really super fashionable, cool, like, gorgeous Korean people coming to our stadium. And that kind of bonding that you end up doing, particularly if you do end up being lucky enough to sit near a few Korean fans and you kind of get chatting or just interacting with them at all, they're just a wonderful addition to the stadium. I love it, and it would be such a terrible day if and when Son does finally go, or they stop coming because, you know, they maybe give up on Spurs once he's not there. Please, Tottenham, just continue signing excellent Koreans so that we can continue having these brilliant people come and just enrich our match day experience, because they really do. They're so great. There was a brilliant scene Rosa and I caught outside the South Stand when we were having a drink after the game, where a group of sort of British fans, I guess you'd say, they were just passing their sort of small children to this group of Korean fans to sort of, I don't know, they were just, here, have my child.
Like a trophy. We were like, like a trophy, whose child is that?
Sort of Lion
King. And then there was that one guy who was like, yeah, son's my cousin. And we were like, so that's why you're out here instead of in like the VIP suite. Shout out to Ash, actually, who are like, I'm very sad he's not here to talk about like his swanky experience where he was like in some, I don't know, where, like he was in like the fancy VIP bit, right?
Yeah, he got
swept. It looked pretty posh. And,
it looked very posh indeed. He is now ill, so I hope that he didn't like get anything from didn't eat a dodgy prawn.
So his very own lasagna gate.
but yeah, it was. I mean, the vibe in the stadium was. I mean, obviously there was the Queen stuff and the slightly not entirely sort of silent minute silence, which sort of just captured how ridiculous football crowds can be. I just love the fact there was a bit of noise and someone decides to, the best way to counter that noise is to, what did someone say? Like,
show some fucking shut respect. Shut the fuck up.
C-U-N-T, yeah. Which then stop. Just produced a
so
lot.
So respectful.
You know.
So respectful.
But it was a kind of weird vibe, Tom, wasn't it? Like just in general, that sort of setting up the game in that way, it left a sort of odd feeling around the place, certainly for the first half almost.
I'll be honest, kind of deliberately, I came into the stadium as late as possible. And actually what they'd done on our gangway was stop people coming in while they were doing the minute silence, I guess, so people weren't just wandering in and spoiling the moment. But did the 70th minute kind of applause, right? When they... Mm. To recognise 70 years on the throne, didn't like Son's first goal come soon after that?
I think it was about 90 seconds afterwards. It would have been I was thinking at the time how weird it would have been had either. I was thinking, being a Spurs fan, I was thinking, oh God, what if Leicester score?
I thought it was
the minutes of applause. It'd be so weird.
It was quite bizarre for the players because I don't know. I think they briefly thought, are we meant to stop here? The ref kind of looked up and thought, do we stop playing for a minute?
The screen stopped showing the match and went to the Queen.
And then it was that weird thing of like, do we continue to like just clapping for the minute, even if like we concede a goal or we score a goal. So I don't know. It was very strange. But potentially it fired Son up. I mean, that's what, how, you know, it helped him to a bit of noise helped him to score a hat trick soon after.
I'll be honest with you, I didn't realise at first what was happening, and I thought we were all clapping for Sonny initially, and then I was like, oh, this is happening, okay.
I mean, he is, that's like, royalty, isn't
yeah,
he?
Exactly, so. My king.
My king, our king, king. Yeah.
Our definitely. King, absolutely. From kings to queens, let's talk about Spurs women, who started the WSL season away at Leicester. They won 2-1. This was a far, far more sort of familiar Tottenham Hotspur narrative, right? Go ahead, 2-0 at the break. Start the second half, immediately score an own goal, put yourselves under pressure for the rest of the game. But, Rosa, we did it. We hung on and we claimed 3 points to kickstart our league season in the WSL.
But yes, we won. And no surprises for who opened the scoring. It was Ash Neville with an absolute wonder strike. It was just one of those moments where she just wandered right into the middle of the park and was like, I'm just going to have a go from like God knows however many yards out. And
it was miles out. It was miles out.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've not seen it,
absolutely spectacular. Yeah, do. It's such an incredible goal. And it was just like perfect.
Was she playing a bit further forward than she was, like, because she was very much our right back last year, right? But did I detect she was playing a bit further upfield?
She was, yes. Yeah. So they went three at the back to like as we discussed last week. So it was Zdorsky Bartrip and Amy Turner, who's just arrived. So so she got to play further up. But to be honest, she seemed to just be doing quite a lot of roaming. And like, again, I don't really, you know, you sort of hate to do that thing of comparing them with, you know, players on the men's team. But I was like, this just feels like the Bale trajectory for her. Do you know what I mean? Just like gradually move further up the pitch until you're just kind of, a free floating roaming goal scorer, really. She was great. It was a slightly weird game because we started like, sort of three at the back and then the wing backs and then sort of three in the middle and two up front, but none of the sort of new forwards started. But Rosella Ryan had to go off really early with an injury, which was a real shame. So then Ellie Brazil came on, but it was a sort of, it definitely looked like a kind of everyone is still settling in kind of a game. Like, we did play well, but they also had quite a lot of chances and it just looked slightly, I don't know if nervy is the right word, but a bit open, I guess, given the formation. So that goal kind of came just at the sort of right time, a kind of nerve settling goal. And then Drew Spence got a goal on her, which was great, but unfortunately she also was gave away their own goal that made it 2-1. So like it was a great, like, obviously, it's always good to win a game, but I think especially because we didn't get to have our opening game, so we kind of got away without having to face United just yet, which I think, while it's disappointing that we didn't get to play at the stadium, it's probably a good thing that we don't have to play United just yet. So it was a kind of nice, let's get that win and get everybody kind of a bit more bedded in. I think... yeah, everybody, like, I liked Drew Spence a lot. It was a shame because I was watching her and thinking, oh, she looks great. And then my internet crashed. And then the next time I sort of was aware of anything going on, she'd conceded an own goal, which was a real shame. But I think they're sort of, you know, they're carrying on as they did last season. And really, I like, hopefully just with a few more goals. And honestly, around Ash Neville, I think, again, to be honest.
And it feels like a few of the newer signings were sort of either on the bench or hadn't quite kind of bubbled up into first team action just yet. So it feels like there's a lot to come from the team, particularly as they do seem like they're going to take a wee while to get used to playing a back three. Just an easy North London derby at the Emirates coming up next for them. It doesn't seem fair that both the men's and the women's next fixtures is in a way.
I was going to say, God, we've both got to do it. I just want some nice football. I don't want to have to do both of those things. And oh God, that's really ghastly. Ugh.
At least okay.
Well, whatever. We'll just see what we can get from that, I guess. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's going to be quite an occasion. I know.
And Arsenal always good to go there first. I maintain this.
Very much so, yeah. And it should be a really, you know, an incredible occasion. I think Arsenal are trying to break the record that we hold, I believe. for most people. Yeah, but hopefully that means we can then try and get
that's
it back.
We'll get them back at next time.
Get them back both attendance and result. remember, was it that League Cup final?
The attendance trophy. I don't care whichever
one. Attendance trophy. Remember when we won the arch before that League Cup final, where whoever was the sponsor of the League Cup at the time did some bonkers, like, was it done on like noise or some sort of like social media interaction? But like, whoever won,
I think it was social media. Either way, so embarrassing.
It was so embarrassing. I mean, I guess it would have been worse. Anyway, we lost the match, so it's irrelevant. But yeah, we'll win the attendance. Yeah,
so that's it.
The next North London derby when it's back for ours.
So more of our fans got to see us lose. Great.
Let's talk about culture. Tom, what culture? What cultural things have you been watching, listening to, etc.? Please.
Two things. The return of Bjork. I think actually we're meant to say Bjork, but you kind of just pronounce it in a really low key way.
Well, you are our resident Bjork expert, so Bjork. We're very much looking to you for this.
You're barely meant to say it in if you're Icelandic, I think. But she is back. 56. I hadn't realised she was quite 56.
And, Jesus, 56.
Yeah, and still the coolest woman on the fucking planet, like easily. So her new album's coming. It's called Fasora. There are two tracks out already. She's worked with a Gabba, a sort of, I can't remember if they're Thai or Filipino, an Asian Gabba DJ collective. On some stuff. She's worked with El Guincho, who's the guy who does a lot of Rosalia's music as well on production. There's two incredible videos out. The like costumes are like Burberry and like, you know, the best fashion. I'm not a fashion guy, but the outfits are incredible and custom designed for her. The videos are amazing. The second one that came out is by Stephen Klein, the fashion photographer. And she's just amazing still. Also, she's released a podcast, and the podcast is going through her albums one by one. So I've only listened to the first one, which is about debut, but it's really fascinating about how her childhood in Iceland influenced what she wanted to do, and then moving to London and kind of going clubbing and how that influenced the sound of her early music as well. It's just, the podcast is great. And I don't think I realised actually debut came out when she was 26 or 7. Okay. So she was actually quite, you know, relatively old by pop standards. She'd been in the Sugar Cubes and stuff, obviously. Anyway, she's fucking amazing and still the coolest woman on the planet.
Is she playing soon? Are you seeing her?
Annoyingly, she seems to do so few gigs. She did this run of shows with an orchestra. And she doesn't exactly play the hits, I don't think. But, you know, it's an incredible experience. But she only did one date in the UK at that Blue Dot Festival at Jodrell Bank somewhere in the north, which was totally impractical to go to. But hopefully she'll announce gigs. But, yeah, those new tracks are bonkers and brilliant. And the podcast is great. And just one other TV show, Ladhood, which is on iPlayer, a guy called Liam Williams, who has another TV show called Please Like. And it's just about his teenage years in Leeds, near Leeds. And it contrasts that with his current life in London. It's extremely funny. It's so, so funny and also weirdly deep. And he just released the third series of, and third and final series. I'd kind of say it's like, there's a tiny bit of the in-betweeners to it, I guess, but it's like miles deeper and kind of better and, yeah, just really hilarious.
Because that was the reason, I think, that I didn't watch initially, because I felt like the trailers for it made it look like a sort of in-betweeners for the 2020s. And I was like, I'm probably too old for this now, so it's not for me. But everyone, well, not everyone, but tons of people whose sort of views on telly that I very much admire love this show. And it does seem like it isn't just for, you know, 15-year-olds that want some sort of boob jokes. It's like very much kind of looking to the, you know, fragile sort of teenage boy psyche and how we evolve and all that kind of stuff, right? Is that fair?
Yeah, oh, totally. It's there's that. There's like very base, you know, it's not slapstick, but there's some base level jokes. That, and then there is real, there is genuine depth about growing up, being a teenager. And also he works at a media company in his 30s. There's some very funny stuff about his present life in London and how it's like a massive letdown compared to where he thought he was going to be at 17. It's really, really good. You'll love it, honestly. It's not, it's kind of potentially was sold as a kind of in-betweeners-y sort of teenagers thing, but it's so, so funny and quite deep. He's very smart, Liam Williams, the guy that does it.
Tom, where are you? Talk to me about House of the Dragon. Where are you? Are you all caught up yet?
Absolutely not. No, we've done two.
Okay.
We've only done the
first.
Are
you in, Tom?
I think so, but then I've seen people say the first couple are slower and then it kind of speeds
definitely
up. But there's more action. The first two, yeah, Paddy Considine's wig's ridiculous. but apart from that, I think I'm sold. Yeah, I'm liking Matt Smith.
You need to keep going because, episode three is a bit of a mixed bag, but episode four, is thespy actors, like, going at it, and then sexy time. So I was like, Tom, you just need to keep going for that because it hits that like Game of Thrones sweet spot. Also quite silly.
That's fine. I'm up for silly
as well.
Quite shocking as well, I thought, of the fourth episode. The sexy time in question, I was like, oh. I know
I was sort of prepped for it, so I was just like, oh, here we are.
Yeah.
Also, Rosa, as you suggested, old Reese the Fans is very good in it as well.
He's so fucking good.
Yeah.
The scene that he has in episode four, he has the scene with Paddy, and it's just proper like, let's do this. Let's ACT. Do you know what I mean? Like they've got it, and it's just very, very, very cool. I'm obviously fully into it, and it's basically like all I watch. And if anyone else is into it, because I've gone through like quite a few Game of Thrones podcasts, and the one that is my absolute favorite is called Trial by Content. So I would recommend that. They split it. So if you haven't read the book or you just don't want to be spoiled, there's like the first half is just general chit chat about it, and then the second half they kind of go deeper into it. So if you kind of want to think about having, so I really recommend that one. It's just really fun. I just can't really watch a TV show anymore without having some sort of like audio accompaniment, I've realized.
And Rosa, are you satisfied with how good it is? Is it living up to your expectations?
Yeah, I feel quite. There's a couple of things I sort of wasn't super into. I feel like I was a bit disappointed with the way they just made Rhaenyra like this kind of sulky teenager for like 3 years. It's a bit like, I don't feel like they really thought about that relationship enough, but I think they rescued it this week. I mean, you know, Game of Thrones is much like Tottenham Hotspur. It's a roller coaster. Like even the early years of Game of Thrones, which were better than the later years, it was a hot mess at times, right? Like
quite literally, yeah.
Exactly. There's loads of stuff I never liked about it. And that stuff is still in House of the Dragon. And then there's loads of stuff I do like about it. So it's never going to be perfect. But once again, I'm in a state of acceptance about the things I love.
You are conditioned to love these types of things, clearly.
That's it, basically.
Anything else? Are you totally dragoned up right now? Is there anything else you're enjoying?
I finally started watching season two of Hacks last night. And I've only got one episode in, and I feel like there are more actual jokes this time around, right? Like I feel like it made me actual like lol more this time. Like several occasions, whereas I feel like the first season was funny but more of a kind of mood, whereas this is actually cracking me up. I feel slightly bad because like Jimmy and Kayla are so fucking funny, right? They're just so, so funny, and I feel like it's a bit of a, oh, here's this show, finally there's a show about like an older woman, and here I'm laughing at like the younger woman and the other dude, but they're really, really funny, so what are you gonna do?
They're really funny. And didn't Jean Smart just got an Emmy, didn't she?
She did. So, you know, she gets a lot of recognition. I feel like she would forgive me for saying these other guys are really funny too. Sorry, Jean.
Mate, I still haven't watched the second. We only got halfway through the first, really, which I feel like is sacrilege. So yeah, we need to do Ladhood. We need to go back to Hacks. That's my homework. I finished The Capture, season two of The Capture, which is on the BBC, which is really good. I spoke about it last week, but the last couple of episodes, Holiday Grainger and Papa Residu are so good in this, and it's such a step up from the slightly kind of schlocky first season of the show, which you don't really have to have watched to watch the second one, I wouldn't say, really. You could just sort of read a bit of a synopsis and you'd be fine. It's just that kind of slightly preposterous, but really slick and lovely looking, with some good actors in thing that the BBC does really well. And
was he from I May Destroy You?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just really good for these sort of suddenly very dark, autumn evenings when you just want to sort of curl up and watch something that's very slick and a bit preposterous, but very watchable. So that I would recommend, definitely, having now finished that season. It's also got a really satisfying end to the second season. Like, it's very rare that I come away from any end of a series being like, oh, they really did well to wrap that stuff up and they tied all the bows up and it was every character, I understand why they got to where they got to. This does a really good job. Anyway.
Yeah, so that's why I don't watch thrillers and cop shows, because the ending is always terrible. And every murder mystery, there's always Broadchurch or whatever, the one everyone loved. And then it was just like, this guy was a pedo and he killed the kid. Like, it's just always
That's basically how they finished all seasons of Broadchurch. A couple of music-y things as well. Hold the Girl by Rina Sawayama came out last week. I don't know if it's actually as compelling as her first album, which I really loved, and I thought sort of marked her out as like one of the most exciting people in British music. This feels a bit more safe and a bit more done by committee, in terms of, I feel like they've just kind of lined up every deluxe producer and songwriter to try and turn her into a sort of 24 carat star. But I still think she's like well worth looking at as one of our very best pop stars. And there's a few moments on the album which I think really do show just how interesting and thrilling she is as an artist. So definitely give that a go. And there's a new Fred Again track that came out last week as well, called Danielle, Smile on My Face, which I feel a bit bad talking about Fred Again without Ash here, because he's our sort of big Fred Again champion, but he just doesn't miss as far as I'm concerned. I feel like guy's just gold every time. He's wicked, and this track I love. It's also a new Muramasa album called Demon Time, which came out to almost no fanfare at all on Friday, which, considering just how sort of hotly tipped he was for a couple of records, but I suppose shows that cautionary tale of, if you, Tom, I think you put it, if you're a dance producer and you start singing on your own records and go a bit emo for your second album, bad things tend to happen. And that is what happened with him. I think this is a kind of return to form, but that first album was so incredible that I'm sort of itching for him to get back there. Don't know if this is that. I need to give it a bit more time. But yeah, Demon Time by Muramasa, I'll be listening to a bit more this week as well. And that's that. That is our show. Thank you ever so much for watching. That's season 2, episode 7 of Hometown Glory in the bag. Tom, thank you ever so much for your company. Rosa, of course, yours too. We'll be back before the North London Derby to preview. But obviously, we're into international break now, so you can have a little rest from us. And we'll see you very soon. Rosa, can you see us off, please, in Billy's absence?
Up the Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.